1081. The hits. Forget you.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, John Russell, and Jill Robbins. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Ukraine reported Monday that its forces had pushed Russian troops back from the northeastern city of Kharkiv. Some of the troops pushed even farther north from Kharkiv to reach the Russian border, Ukrainian defense officials said. The claims could not be independently confirmed. Kharkiv is Ukraine's second largest city after Kyiv. The Associated Press reported that a group of soldiers documented their push to the Russian border in a video. The video was published Sunday on Facebook by Ukraine's Defense Ministry. The video showed a group of about 12 soldiers gathered around a wooden post painted in blue and yellow, Ukraine's colors. The soldiers placed the post in the ground in a sign of victory. It was not clear exactly where the video was shot. If confirmed, Ukraine's latest success against Russian forces would signal another gain in momentum for Ukrainian troops in the conflict. The war began when Russian troops launched an invasion of Ukraine on February 24th. Kharkiv sits about 50 kilometers south of Russia's border. The city had experienced weeks of heavy Russian bombardments. Russia's retreat from the city comes after the country's failure to capture Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, earlier in the war. As fighting continued across Ukraine, international efforts to punish Russia for its aggression pressed ahead. In Brussels, European Union officials met Monday to consider additional economic sanctions against Russia. The EU has already proposed a ban on Russian oil imports. But several small nations, led by Hungary, have opposed the ban because they are highly dependent on Russian oil. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell told reporters that diplomats were working to resolve the concerns of nations opposed to the ban. But he added, "I cannot ensure that it is going to happen because positions are quite strong." Existing sanctions against Russia, along with weapons assistance provided by Western nations, have helped Ukraine's forces slow Russia's offensive. Still, thousands of people have been killed in Ukraine during the war. The dead include many civilians. Major cities have been heavily bombed, and more than 6 million people have fled their homes to seek refuge in neighboring states. Russia, which calls its invasion of Ukraine a special military operation, has denied targeting civilians during the conflict. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said Sunday that the war is not going as Moscow had planned. He added, Ukraine can win this war. I'm Brian Lynn. For the first time, scientists have grown plants in moon soil collected by NASA's Apollo astronauts. The scientists had no idea if anything would grow in the moon dirt. They wanted to see if it could be used to grow food by the next generation of moon explorers. The results surprised them. Robert Furl of the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences was surprised with the results. "Plants actually grow in lunar stuff? Are you kidding me?" he said. Furl and other researchers planted thalecress, a small flowering plant, in moon soil returned from the Apollo missions. The good news was that all of the seeds grew. The bad news was that, after the first week, the lunar soil stressed the plants so much that they grew slowly. Most of the moon plants ended up stunted, meaning small or not fully developed. Results of the study appeared recently in the publication Communications Biology. The longer the soil was exposed to radiation and solar wind on the moon, the worse the plants seemed to do. The soil collected by the Apollo 11 mission was the least helpful for growth. It was exposed a couple billion years longer to the elements, the scientists said. Simon Gilroy of the University of Wisconsin-Madison was not part of the study. He said, "This is a big step forward to know that you can grow plants." Gilroy added, "The real next step is to go and do it on the surface of the moon. Moon dirt is full of glass particles from micrometeorite impacts. These particles got in the Apollo lunar landers and wore down the moonwalkers' spacesuits. One solution might be to use younger geologic spots on the moon, like lava flows, for digging up soil. The environment also could be changed by adding special nutrient mixtures or artificial lighting." I'm John Russell.
Sunflowers are huge plants with bright yellow flowers. They have a long history in North America. There is evidence they were used for food and for medicine by Native Americans beginning around 1000 BC. The seeds from sunflowers were likely brought to Europe by Spanish explorers around the late 16th century. Over time, they found their way to Eastern Europe. Today, Ukraine is the world's leading producer of the plants. Sunflowers are grown for their seeds and to make oil. The plant has increasingly become popular on social media. That is because users enjoy taking pictures of themselves in bright fields of sunflowers. The photos are called sunflower selfies. But in recent months, sunflower images are appearing on social media for a different reason, to show support for Ukraine following Russia's invasion. Gardening expert and writer Jessica Damiano recently wrote a story about growing sunflowers for the Associated Press. "It is easy to grow your own sunflowers," she writes. "Small versions of the plants can even be grown in containers. If you start growing sunflower from seeds, put them in room temperature water
for 2 to 8 hours before planting to start the growing process. Plant each seed into dirt 2.5 centimeters deep and 15 to 30 centimeters apart. Plant them after the danger of frost has passed or start indoors 3 weeks before your last frost date. Keep the soil wet, but not too wet, until the seeds begin to grow. Sunflower plants can be moved outdoors when the danger of frost has passed in your area. Choose a place outside that will provide the plants with at least 6 to 8 hours of direct sunlight each day. As the plants grow, they will develop long roots that work their way deep into the ground. So, before planting, it is important to loosen the soil. Dig at least 1/3 of a meter down and remove any rocks. Mix a large amount of compost into the soil where the plant will grow. Compost provides important, lasting nutrients that will help the plants all season long. Water the plants when the soil dries. Aim to provide about 2.5 centimeters of water a week. Pay attention to the amount of rainfall your area receives each week. A 5-centimeter layer of mulch will help the soil hold water and reduce competition from unwanted plants. The sunflowers may not need additional nutrients if they were planted with compost. If compost was not added during the planting process, provide nutrients through a slow-release, all-purpose fertilizer 1 or 2 times during the growing season. Some kinds of sunflowers can grow up to 3 meters tall. These kinds of sunflowers may require protection from strong winds. So, it is best to plant them against a structure that will protect them from the wind. You can also tie them to something tall for support. When the flowers open, you can cut them and bring them inside. Put them in a container of water and enjoy their brightness and beauty. To gather the seeds, wait until the plants die back and the flowers start to fall at the end of the season. The backs of the flowers will be brown. The seeds will start coming out of the head. Cut the flowers off the plants. Then put them into a bag or container to avoid spilling the seeds, which will be loose. Remove the seeds by rubbing flowers with your hands or a hard brush. Do this over a container. Look through the seeds and remove parts of the plant that came off. Wash the seeds with water. Set them out to dry overnight. Sunflower seeds may be eaten cooked or uncooked. To roast the seeds, you need an oven. Set the temperature to 165 degrees Celsius. Once the oven is heated, cook the seeds until they are brown. The process takes anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. To make salted seeds, boil them in hot salted water for 90 minutes to 2 hours. Let them dry and then roast them in the oven. I'm Jill Robbins.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week, our series brings us to the events of 2008. It was a year that combined one of the nation's worst financial crises with one of its most exciting elections in recent history. In 2006 and 2007, the American housing market began to collapse. home values had been going up and up. Now the balloon burst. People started losing homes they had bought with money borrowed on easy credit terms, loans they were then unable to repay. The hope was that the crisis in the housing market could be contained and that it would not spread to the wider economy. Traditionally, local banks would have suffered the losses on the bad loans. But times had changed. Big investment banks had been buying those loans. The investment banks then resold them as securities offering high returns. Credit rating agencies working for the investment banks had told investors that the securities were safe. Selling a financial product based on a large group of loans was supposed to limit the risk if a few loans went bad. That was the idea. But that was before millions of homeowners stopped paying their mortgage loans. Mortgage-backed securities became known as toxic assets. No one wanted to be anywhere near them. In March of 2008, Bear Stearns became the first investment bank to fail as a result of the crisis. Others followed. In September, Lehman Brothers, the nation's fourth largest investment bank, sought protection in bankruptcy court. Its failure only deepened the fears in credit markets. Toward the end of 2008, an international credit freeze developed. No one wanted to take the risk of lending money to banks or other companies that might have owned toxic assets. Some people feared that there could even be a global depression, the first since the 1930s. The United States economy, the world's largest, started shrinking at the end of 2007. The unemployment rate started rising. President George W. Bush's administration, Congress, and the central bank, the Federal Reserve, took extraordinary steps to deal with the growing financial crisis. Their efforts included loans to banks, automakers, and other companies. The aim was to rescue businesses that officials considered too big to fail. The bailouts from Washington were a decision that not all of the American people agreed with. But the people also had to make a decision of their own in 2008. It was a presidential election year, and the candidates were some of the most diverse in the nation's history. The Republican Party nominated Arizona Senator John McCain. At 72, he would have taken office as the nation's oldest first-term president.
So stand up with me, my friends. Stand up and fight for America, for her strength, her ideals, and her future. The contest begins tonight.
John McCain had been a Navy pilot during the Vietnam War. In 1967, the North Vietnamese shot down his plane and took him prisoner. He was tortured and held for more than 5 years. He returned home a hero. During the presidential campaign, he spoke often about his experience as a prisoner of war. His campaign message was, "Country first." Senator McCain quickly secured the Republican nomination to succeed George W. Bush. The Democrats needed more time to choose a nominee. The race settled on two leading candidates. One of them was Hillary Clinton. Her husband was former President Bill Clinton. They spent 8 years living in the White House. As First Lady, she held an unusually public role in her husband's administration. Later, she was twice elected as a senator from New York. Now she was trying to return to the White House, this time as the first woman president of the United States.
So if you want a winner who knows how to take them on, I'm your girl.
The other leading candidate for the Democratic Party's nomination would also make history if elected. He was a first-term United States senator from Illinois named Barack Obama. He was born in Hawaii to a white mother from Kansas and a black father from Kenya. If he won, he would be America's first black president. Blacks in the United States had been slaves until 1863. They were not permitted to vote until 1870. Women in the United States did not have a constitutional right to vote until 1920. And not until the 1960s did federal civil rights laws bar discrimination against either group. During the nominating fight between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, there was a lot of discussion and debate in America about gender and race. Some talked about the problems that women still faced in society and wondered whether Americans could accept a woman as president. Others talked about the problems that blacks still faced in society and wondered whether Americans could accept a black man as president.
I think we're ready. Well, I hope we're ready.
I just hear people comments, yeah, you know, that'll be the day when we have a black man running our country, yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
Candidate Obama gave a speech about race in America.
I'm the son of a black man from Kenya and a white woman from Kansas. I was raised with the help of a white grandfather who survived a depression to serve in Patton's army during World War II, and a wild white grandmother who worked on a bomber assembly line at Fort Leavenworth while he was overseas. I've gone to some of the best schools in America, and I've lived in one of the world's poorest nations. I am married to a black American who carries within her the blood of slaves and slave owners, an inheritance we pass on to our two precious daughters. I have brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, uncles, and cousins of every race and every hue scattered across three continents. And for as long as I live, I will never forget that in no other country on earth is my story even possible. It's a story that hasn't made me the most conventional of candidates, but it is a story that has seared into my genetic makeup the idea that this nation is more than the sum of its parts, that out of many, we are truly one.
Many political experts predicted that Barack Obama would lose the nomination. For one thing, he was still new to many Americans, while almost everyone knew who Hillary Clinton was. Also, she had many wealthy supporters donating to her campaign. But political scientist Larry Sabato at the University of Virginia said those experts did not understand the country's mood.
They underestimated the power not just of Barack Obama, but also the yearning for change and the antipathy toward dynasty. The idea that the Bushes and the Clintons would essentially control the presidency from 1988 to potentially 2016.
Hope and change became the messages of the Obama campaign. Barack Obama won enough delegates to secure his party's nomination, which he accepted in August, shortly after his 47th birthday. His choice for vice president was Joe Biden, a longtime senator from Delaware. But Mr. Obama's nomination was not the biggest news story for long. The next day, John McCain had a big announcement of his own. His running mate would be Sarah Palin. The Democrats had once nominated a woman for vice president, Geraldine Ferraro, but never the Republicans. Neither party had ever nominated a woman for president. Sarah Palin was the 44-year-old governor of Alaska. Few Americans had ever heard of her until she spoke at the Republican nominating convention. She referred to herself as a hockey mom.
I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
Some women said they admired her ability to balance work and family as the mother of five children.
I feel like she really speaks for me and represents me.
During the campaign, Barack Obama raised a record amount of money for a candidate, about $745 million. He became the first candidate to reject the modern system of public financing of presidential elections. Instead, he accepted smaller contributions from hundreds of thousands of supporters. His campaign made extensive use of the internet to collect donations, connect with voters, and organize volunteers. John McCain did not have as much money to spend. Something else also set him apart from the Democratic nominee. John McCain supported the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Barack Obama said he would bring the troops home from Iraq within 2 years of becoming president. But the top issue in the campaign was the economy. Again, Larry Sabato at the University of Virginia.
The fundamental issue in most presidential elections is the economy. It really is the economy, stupid, the old slogan from the 1992 Clinton campaign. When an administration has a positive, strong economy, they're tough to beat, even if it's a non-incumbent running. But when the economy turns sour, they're halfway out the door.
Barack Obama and John McCain agreed on at least one thing in dealing with the economy. They both supported President Bush's call for the government to bail out the financial industry. Many Americans disliked the idea of helping banks that had acted irresponsibly. But Congress agreed to let the government buy bad loans from banks and temporarily become part owner of some rescued companies. Supporters argued that the bailouts were needed to save the economy from collapse. In November of 2008, Americans elected Barack Hussein Obama as their 44th president. He received 53% of the popular vote. He won some states that had not chosen a Democrat in many years. A little more than 60% of voting age Americans cast their ballots, the highest percentage since 1964. Support for Barack Obama was especially strong among young people and African Americans. Many voters were emotional on election night.
I'm speechless. I'm trying not to cry right now. I'm thinking of my great-grandfather, my grandmother, and man, this is amazing.
Because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America.
But the election of 2008 was not the end of America's economic problems. What became known as the Great Recession would officially end in June of 2009, 6 months into the new president's term. But its lasting effects would continue to be felt all the way into the 2012 election season.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.